You are listening to the official podcast of Salem Tabernacle in Beacon, New York.
It is so good to see you. Good God. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And they came near. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest." And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over the land of Egypt. Hurry and go to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you. For there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty.'" And he kissed all his brothers. Wow. Hold on to that one. "And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him." What I wanted to talk about today, and what I'm quickly trying to figure out how to talk about differently today, is the idea of how we allow the information sources in our life to infiltrate our life. We have a funny sermon title for today. It's called "Sun-Screened: Are We Strolling or Scrolling with Christ?" And in some ways, have we screened Jesus out? Is he in our life, but real blurry, because there's too many screens between us and him, between us and ourselves? And not just screens, but everything that screens represent. Information, podcasts, news, quick 2 a.m. sound bites of influencers and self-help gurus. And we're taking it all in. And we're taking in the gospel. Hopefully. We're taking in the gospel. The question that has plopped into my spirit as we head towards Lent is, are we taking in the gospel the way that we're taking in the other information? And are we looking at our Bible the way that we look at our phone? And when we do read it, does it form us? Or is the Bible and the church and the gospel merely informing us, where everything else is actually forming the way we think, expect, live, act toward one another, toward our enemies, toward those we don't agree with? And I just couldn't believe that this story was the story for today, and it's just making more and more sense in real time as I process this out loud in front of all of you. This is why Paul says to pray for him, and I always wondered why Paul would say that. I'm like, I'm glad you guys pray for me, because there are some moments where so many different things are happening at once, and then, like, here we are. We're going to stand up in front of everybody and share, and God is downloading a new version of this into my spirit as we talk right now. But imagine Joseph growing up with Jacob as his father. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph is growing up, his dad, his great-grandfather is Abraham. His grandfather is Isaac, and his father is Jacob. And you can imagine Jacob in all of his deep insecurity with so many kids, all the kids, Mandia-level amount of kids. He probably told his boys the story of Isaac and Ishmael and how they didn't get along and how they separated. And he probably told that story to his 13 plus kids. He had some daughters in there. And said, we can't let this happen. And the more you have in your community, the more chance there is of betrayal. If you can have two kids and they have a splitting up, Cain and Abel, Isaac and Ishmael, Jacob and Esau. Man, if you have 12, something's going to happen at any given moment. And he probably told the story about himself and Esau and how it got to the point where I wasn't sure, did I do the right thing? I betrayed my brother, but my mom told me to. Then he wanted to kill me and I had to leave my family for decades. And then on my way home, Esau showed up with 400 people. And I had to split my whole family into two camps just in case he killed one of them, he wouldn't kill both of them. And there's division again. And Jacob probably raised his kids to say, don't let this happen. And then Joseph starts. I had a dream that you all bowed down to me. And Jacob is probably like, oh, okay, this isn't going to be good. I know my other sons. This probably isn't going to be good. He's like, I had a dream that you were all stalks of wheat and you bowed down to me. I had another dream that you were all stars and you bowed down to me. And they're like, we're going to get rid of him. And one day, Jacob sent Joseph out to go find his brothers. And some rabbis actually suggest that he knew that the brothers were going to beat him up. Just, I'm going to send him out there to his brothers and they're going to beat him up and he'll learn to not be arrogant. He goes out there to find them with all these stories in his spirit and they throw him into a pit. And ironically, Ishmaelite traitors come and keep Joseph from dying. Let's pause on that for a second and realize that Abraham's mistake ends up coming and rescuing Abraham's own genealogy. That's for somebody. Maybe the mistake is thinking that the thing that went wrong was a mistake at all. Somebody just take that. That's for free. On me. They sell him into slavery. And all of a sudden, he's immediately given favor. So much favor that the ladies love him. And one falsely accuses him. We still have the children in the room, so you all do the math. One falsely accuses him, and he ends up being put into prison falsely. So look at this now. He's given these beautiful stories of God calling his great-grandfather out to the unknown. Through death and tragedy, Abraham comes onto the scene and he becomes this great leader, and Isaac becomes this great leader, and Jacob is becoming this great leader, and he's hearing the stories of that God is one and that God is going to make their descendants as the sand of the sea and as the stars of the heavens, and that he's going to provide for them and feed them and take care of them. And now he's got all these stories. And he's been betrayed by every character in those stories. And now he's betrayed by the people who purchased him. And then he meets two prisoners. And they're all like, we had dreams and we don't know what to do. And Joseph's like, here's what's going to happen. Here's what your dream means. You're going to die. I'm sorry. You're going to live. And by the way, guy who's going to live, when you live, can you please tell Pharaoh I'm the one who said you were going to live so that way I could maybe get out of here? And talk about prison reform, my man was in an actual well pit. That's it. Just a pit. A hole in the ground. And the cupbearer forgets about him. Ironically, the cupbearer forgot about Joseph when he entered this day into paradise. Do we hear that? Do we hear Good Friday undertones there? When the cupbearer entered paradise, he forgot about Joseph. Then Pharaoh has the dreams. He's like, oh. As a man, I know this feeling. I hear the garbage truck come by, and I'm like, I forgot something. He's like, there, Pharaoh, there's somebody who can interpret dreams. And they go get Joseph. Interprets the dreams rightly. And Pharaoh says, you are going to be second in command. You are going to be prince of Egypt. And instead of a coat of many colors, he now wears Egyptian royalty robes. And he's in charge of everything and everyone but Pharaoh. So now understand, Joseph has now been raised twice. Once by his family and hearing the stories of the covenant. And now he's been raised a second time in an empire of conquest, greed, accumulation, nationalism, slavery, all kinds of racism. Like this, we're Egyptians, we are the ones who are going to rule the world. And he's got both of these upbringings in him. Both of these sources of information are in him. And he's been equally blessed and traumatized by both. And then one day he's out there looking over all the people he's feeding, and some recognizable faces show up. Let's call this 20, 30 years later. And he's looking at his brothers who said, we will never bow down to you. You're crazy. We're going to get rid of you. And here they are bowing in front of him, saying, we would like some food. And Joseph does, despite what you may have been taught about this, what anyone... I don't like Easter because Jesus didn't do anything that we would do on Easter. Jesus just like planted flowers and ascended into heaven. Joseph, on the other hand, got the tasty moment, and he starts to torment his brothers. I want you to go back and get the one that your father didn't bring. But that's our father's new favorite one because the other favorite one is dead. He's like, go get him. Our father's not going to let him, then I'm not feeding you. And as a matter of fact, a few of you can stay in prison until the other ones come, until Benjamin comes back. And then they have to go tell Jacob, here's what happened just now. We need to take Benjamin with us. And then they come back. And Joseph is an interesting line. Joseph can't contain himself. But the Hebrew implies that Joseph was trying to contain himself. Which means Joseph didn't want to reconcile with his brothers. He wanted to get vengeance on them. And why? Because the latest sources of information that were raising him said, when people do this to you, you beat them to the ground. And never let anybody know that they can do this. If a country rises up against us, we won't just defeat it. We will defeat it and enslave it and decimate it and raise it to the ground. So Joseph is operating in that new information. But something about the first information he ever heard was causing him to warm up in a way he didn't want to. So he runs out of the room. He washes his face. And he sends his brothers away again. And this time he puts one of his favorite mugs. I love a good coffee mug. He puts one of his favorite mugs, probably his New York Giants one, in Benjamin's sack. A nice, solid 15-ounce heavy coffee mug. Isn't that the best? I know it is. And he's like, go get them and tell them that whoever has my cup is going to die. Tormenting them. Exactly what we would do. They all come back, and Judah, Everybody say Judah. Judah starts to talk to Joseph. And Joseph can't control himself. And he falls on the ground. And he reveals himself to his brothers. And they have this moment that we just read. You didn't send me here. God did. It's like, hold on. They definitely sent you there. What is helping Joseph re-narrate the story of his own trauma? He's with people who have traumatized him. And he's saying, the worst thing you've ever done to me was done because God's hand was on me. So that I could preserve a way of life for you and your little ones. Now, if you want a quick tingly moment, go back to Joseph's dreams. He dreamt that stalks of wheat bowed down to him. Maybe at the time he had that dream, he thought, in a secular way, I'm going to have power over my brothers because they're going to bow down to me. But maybe now in this moment he realizes, no. It was stalks of wheat bowing down to me because I'm supposed to feed them in this famine. And maybe God said to Abraham, your descendants are going to be like the stars of heaven. And so maybe since it was stars that were bowing down to Joseph, it wasn't that Joseph would have authoritative power over them, but that he could keep a way of life for the future generations of his great-grandfather. So maybe in this moment, Joseph realizes power means covenant, not violence, not oppression, not accumulation, but service. And he says to his brothers, I'm going to feed you. Now, in this moment, two kinds of information are one piece of information has informed him, but one piece of information has formed him. So I called Rabbi Brent Spodek, one of the rabbis in Beacon. And I said, Rabbi, I have a weird question for you. I said, I need you to help me with my very Christian sermon that I'm going to preach on Sunday. And he goes, okay. I said, is there any traditions in rabbinical teaching about how Jacob may have raised his kids? And Rabbi said, well, there's one, and I used to sing it to my kids every night. And he sang it to me on the phone. I'm not going to sing it to you on a Sunday. Nope. Also, it was in Hebrew. And on the phone, there are no subtitles. I was like, I don't know. And he said, here's what I just sang to you. Oh God, continue to save me and continue to save my children by the hand of the angel that I wrestled with. Remember Jacob wrestled with the angel? And so Rabbi said, it's very possible that every time those boys were going to go to sleep, Jacob sang this song. Oh God, continue to save me and continue to save my children by the hand of the angel that saved me. And I said, you just gave me the best Christian sermon ever, Rabbi Brent. Said, what if in that moment, of all of the new sources of information going into Joseph, this song that his dad sang to him when he was a kid, won? And in that moment, he realizes, my brothers and I are wrestling, but this wrestling match has to end in salvation, not defeat, just like the wrestling match that my father had with the angel. And instead, he is formed by the gospel. Informed by Egypt, but formed by the gospel. So formed, you ready? Notice this just now when I was reading it, that Jesus, who is formed by these stories. Let's keep in mind, Jesus the man is formed by these stories. As a kid growing up, this is one of the main stories he heard in his life. And so a man named Judas, is now selling him into slavery like Judah did to Joseph. And what does Jesus say to Judas? First, he says, go do what you plan to do and do it quickly. Why did he say that to him? So that later he could say, it wasn't you who did this, but it was God. Because he is God, telling Judas to go do it. So that he could truly live out what happened with Joseph and his brothers. And then when he is arrested and he sees Judas, what does he do? He kisses him. Just like Joseph did with his brothers. He's living out. He's enacting the fulfillment of the stories that formed him in this moment. He says to the thief on the cross, he says, will you remember me when you enter your kingdom? And he says, I will. Jesus is the ultimate cupbearer who doesn't forget us when he enters into paradise, but remembers us. And the Father calls us out of the dungeon into his eternal kingdom. I say all of this to say, and I want Stephanie and the worship team to come back up, please, because I'm going to stop here. Let's stand to our feet this morning. I tell that simple version of that message that was going to be so much longer and have so many amazing points that you'd have cheered the entire time. I tell this story to say, now think about the ways in which we're listening to information. The ways in which we're staring at our phones. What we're letting into our life. I met with somebody recently, very recently, who said to me, you know, this part of this message that you preached, I really don't agree with it. It actually made me really upset. And I was kind of shocked because, like, you disagreed with me? No, that wasn't why. It was the particular thing they were talking about. And I said, here's what I want you to do. I said, I want you to show me in the story of Jesus where his life would disagree with that part of the message that I preached. And the person sat there at Tracks Coffee Shop, and they were like, I don't know. Maybe there's not. And I said, I'm not done yet. One more question. Based on your political beliefs, tell me where you disagree with me. And they spoke for 15 minutes. And I said, we can talk about the issue that you disagree with later, but here's my issue. Why are you more fluent in your political beliefs than you are in the gospel of Jesus Christ? Why? Do you know more about your political beliefs than you do about the Sermon on the Mount? Why, when you hear political things, do you just let it into your brain and have it so form you that you're now trying to reshape the scriptures based on your political beliefs? Why is this happening? I think we have an adulterous relationship with information. And we are married to it in ways, and we're developing mental and emotional children. And if we ask ourselves this, of all the sources of information I listen to, and even the gospel, if it's even a part of it, be honest with yourself today. If all the information you're taking in turned into behavior tomorrow, what would that behavior look like? Would it look like Joseph tormenting his enemies? Or would it look like Joseph forgiving his enemies? Does the information you're most married to in your life look like, blessed are the poor in spirit? I said this to somebody recently was talking to me about all the stuff going on, about how we shouldn't be spending so much money on people who shouldn't be in our country and all this kind of stuff. And I said, listen, I'm not going to take your political views away from you, but I just want to ask you a question. I want you to look at the Good Samaritan story for 1 second, and I want to ask you this. What did the man who got beat up on the side of the road, what did he do that he got beat up on the side of the road? And the person I was talking to was like, I don't know, Jesus doesn't tell us why. And I said, Jesus doesn't tell us why he got beat up. Because if Jesus told us, we would assess whether or not we should help him. How do we know that this guy wasn't involved in a gang and drugs and wasn't in Jerusalem illegally and all this other kind of stuff? Because if we found all that out, we'd step over him too. Jesus doesn't tell us if he did good things to get beat up, because then we would be looking only to help people who do those good things. Jesus basically said, here's why you should help him. Because he's lying on the road. That's what the Bible says. That's not what our scrolling tells us. Our scrolling doesn't help us love our neighbor better. It helps us take sides without realizing we've taken them until it just bubbles up out of us. So I want you to spend a few minutes in worship again. And I'm going to do the same thing. Because I've realized in my life, some of my instantaneous reactions to things are not found, believe it or not, in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. They're found in Billy 13, 14, and 15. And I realize that I let things into my eye gate and my ear gate that have taken up residence in my life, that this Lenten season, which starts in 2 weeks, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to fast my phone from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. because those are the two times that Goliath came out to taunt Israel. And I'm going to fast my phone between 12 p.m. and 3 p.m. for the 40 days of Lent because those are the hours Jesus was on the cross. I'm going to treat my phone like it was a toddler. I'm going to put it to bed at 7. And even if it cries all night long, I'm not going to let it get up until 7 a.m. And then it's going to take a nap from 12 to 3. And if it doesn't want to sleep, it can stay in its room until it's time to get up. Does this bear witness with anybody? And in place of it, I want to read the scriptures. I want to go to bed with the Bible being the last thing I read before I went to bed, and I want to wake up with the Bible being the first thing I read when I wake up, and I want to read the Bible in the middle of the day, and I want to see how different my life is after those 40 days. I want to see if I sleep better than I'm sleeping right now. I want to see if I react more slowly than I'm reacting right now. I want to see if I feel less betrayed by things than I do right now. I want to see if the way of Jesus can do in me what it did in Joseph. So let's just, if this any of this bore witness with you, please spend some time in prayer. Come to the altar. Open yourself up before God and say, Lord, show me where I need to replace secular information with the Holy Gospel. And just spend some time in his presence. And here's the thing. I'm challenging you to put some effort into this. This is not easy. I think right now, this year, 2025, the year of our Lord, 2025, if this is the last year the world exists, here's the thing. I think it's going to be harder to fast screens than it would be to fast food. But I think we can become an altogether different people by Palm Sunday, when Lent is over, if we decide I have to regulate what I'm listening to and make sure that I'm spending more time in prayer with my church family and with Christ than I do with any other form of information in my life. Because I want to be informed by what's going on with plane crashes in the world. I want to be informed by what's going on in Washington. I want to be informed about why Kendrick Lamar doesn't like Drake. I want to be informed by these things. Doesn't like them at all. More than anyone's not been liked, I think, in history. I want to be informed by these things, but I don't want to be formed by them. I want to be formed by the gospel of Jesus Christ so I know what to do with that information. Spend time in prayer. Sit in your seat. Come to the altar. Open yourself up before God. Really, really jump into what God is doing with this. I feel like it's going to be a powerful move in our church.
Thanks for listening to the Salem Tabernacle podcast. For more information about us, including gathering times and our location, check us out online at salemtabernacle.com.